Hello, hello, Vancouver Waves. You are listening to Babe Waves, the show of the Gender Empowerment Collective on CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the UBC Point Grey campus on the traditional unceded Coast Salish lands of the Musqueam people. This is our 10th episode and today we are going to be very busy. Today is a special day for our station CITR 101.9 FM, sorry about that. And this is a full day of student broadcasting, from talk radio to live music to interviews to games and radio documentaries. But at the same time, but at the end of the episode, we want to play a speech from the Women's March that we really liked. Brenna, from our collective, she also has a little speech for us to play. So we are going to be very busy. Anna is here with us today.
Hello, everyone.
She's one of our collective members, and she has been very busy this week interviewing with UBC Women's Clubs. So without further ado, let's hear the talks.
Today we have a special day. It's January 26th when we have 24 hours of student power. That means that we at UBC learn about UBC clubs, our students, what occupies them when they're not studying, what entertains them, what interests them, and what hobbies they have. And so today with me, I have a member of Women in Engineering. Hello, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, so I am the Student Program Coordinator for Women in Engineering. My name is Monreet Chatha, and I am a fifth-year civil engineering student.
Tell me, please, so what is Women in Engineering about? Like, what motivated to create this club, this association, and when did that happen?
So Women in Engineering is a student-run club, but it is affiliated with the Dean's Office. So the way this works is our organization, we aim to promote gender equity throughout the Faculty of Applied Sciences, and we get support from the faculty and staff for that. So as a student program coordinator, my job is to kind of help with these initiatives of building a supportive community for the female engineering students and making them aware of some of the things that are happening, like the unconscious bias or imposter syndrome that exists being a female in a male-represented field. So that's kind of the goal of what we do. Some of the things are like, you know, professional development opportunities or outreach and community building. So
are there a lot of girls who feel victimized by the fact that they're in a masculine community? Like, how does that happen?
So, you know, not so much that they feel victimized. The way it kind of is unconsciously there's something that kind of exists because we know that we're in a male-dominated field. So things, you know, that we're not aware of, our confidence level, the way we communicate, how quickly we put our hand up in class, or how confident we are in our ability as engineers. And there definitely, there's been research proven that these, trying to collect my thoughts.
It's okay, no problem. Like, go for it. You can take the time.
So,
you want me to repeat the question?
Yes,
again,
please.
So like you've mentioned that I have a very weak knowledge in psychology, but that like female students in engineering, they feel pressured, they feel some psychological pressure from the fact that they're in a masculine community. And so how is that expressed? How do you know this is happening? And so do they come and seek for help? And if they do, like, how do you help them?
Okay, so, you know, fortunately, the UBC engineering community is amazing. They're very welcoming. And being a woman in engineering, I don't feel a huge discrepancy at school. But where it does exist is in the workplace. You know, in industry, that barrier is still there. Things like our confidence level, being in a room of male engineers, you know, it's proven that we aren't as fast to put up our hand or, you know, shout out the answer if we're not 100% sure, whereas the male counterpart would do that even if they're 50% sure. So things like that are kind of what we focus on. So it's not so much that the females come to seek individual help. It's more that we focus on these kind of skills that they need, and we try to promote that through our workshops and skill building initiatives.
And so what kind of workshops and skill building initiatives do you organize for them?
So for one of our committees, we do professional development. And for that, we have workshops related to some of the skills, interpersonal or technical, that you don't necessarily learn in the classroom. So we do things like interviewing skills, networking skills, and we have one workshop coming up on February 9th. It's called Women in STEM and Stepping into the Workforce. So it's talking about how kind of the role you take as you step into your first job as a female engineer.
And you've mentioned that you're being supported and I don't know if we're even funded by UBC. So how is that support demonstrated and why is UBC interested in this?
So yeah, we're definitely supported a lot by the faculty and staff of the in the Faculty of Applied Sciences. We're part of the APSI Professional Development group. So the way that that support works is we are provided, you know, with access to certain forms of promotions so we can target a larger audience. And we also are provided with a budget so we can have, like, you know, we can get resources at our events if we need that for the students. We could, you know, book venues or food or things to just gain more attraction from the student perspective so that we can target a larger audience, because kind of, you know, to spread the mission of what we're talking about, it's really we need the larger audience there.
And so you've mentioned that some sort of discrimination against females in engineering, that it's more so in industries and actually when you enter the workforce, when you actually start working, than as being in a student community at a university or just, you know, sitting at a course with a bunch of other students. So are employers actually aware of this, that there is this problem? I'd call it a problem. It doesn't matter, big or small. And if they are aware, like, had you ever spoken to them about this? Had they ever asked you for any advice?
Yeah, I think employers are aware. I think the industry as a whole is aware that it is male dominated. And I think there is, you know, we're coming to a shift that starts off at a younger age, of course, and that's why we have the goal of having 50-50 male to female enrollment by the year 2020 in engineering. That's one of our big goals that we focus on. So, I mean, we're starting on it from the perspective of students and at UBC, but we're hopefully translating that to the industry by, you know, having more industry representatives come out to our events, having more, you know, recruiters or senior management attend our events and listen to some of the issues that we bring up. And that's kind of what we focus on. We have a very large kind of mentoring networking event coming up on March 2nd. It's called WISE, Women in Computer Science and Engineering. And the way that works is we bring in 30 plus industry representatives and we invite 100 plus students. And it's kind of like almost like speed dating. They do a few rounds of networking with each other, and what we try to bring out in that environment is some of the issues that exist as being a woman in the field, and hopefully students can learn from industry and industry can learn from students, and hopefully we can make a shift in both places.
That's a very great idea, and in fact it reminded me of a club, Women in Science. I just had an interview with them lately, and like, you're a woman in engineering, like, you know, all of these, again, male-dominated study fields. And so they have a mentorship that is a mentoring program that is actually constant. Like, it was, like, basically the idea of their club. One of the motivating ideas was to have some mentors that would encourage women to go into science, that would assist them going into science, because it does feel more difficult and complicated to us. And so you've mentioned that your engineering Women in Engineering Club also starts having some mentorship programs. Is it the first time this will happen? And if so, what are you planning to make it, like, once a year or monthly? Like, what is the plan about it?
So we have different levels of mentorship, I'll say. So we do outreach with high school students and elementary school students. So that form of mentorship comes from students in engineering, males and females are welcome in our organization, going out to high schools and discussing, you know, their experiences, talking about engineering and inspiring students to consider engineering as a possible career choice. Then we have our next layer of mentorship, which is industry to students. So that's kind of what this big WISE event is. And this is something we do annually. So it's this year, yeah, it's March 2nd, from 5:30 to 8 p.m. And we do this every year. And, you know, the mentors and the students are always encouraged to connect with each other outside of that event. This is kind of a platform to introduce everyone and bring more industry into the UBC environment and get more students access to them. So that's, yeah, it requires a lot of planning. So that big event we do once a year with our outreach initiatives, we do presentations at the local high schools. We are going to start them quite frequently now. We actually have someone going up to Whistler in a couple weeks to a high school there. So yeah, there's a lot of exciting mentoring opportunities coming with Women in Engineering.
Amazing. So you're actually going beyond the campus of like and all over. Well, Whistler is not even in Metro Vancouver. So, and just I believe our audience would be curious to learn a bit more about this subject. Like you've mentioned that like when you have these, how you call them, like speed dating. Well, these moments when representatives from industries like I assume real engineers and then other employees of engineering companies, when they come to meet with students and that you raise some issues to them, like of what's going on towards women in engineering. And so could you give some examples of like what kind of issues you raise to them?
I think a lot of the issues do have to do with, I mean, one that just comes to mind because we were talking about it earlier is that level of confidence or just, you know, when there's that saying that, you know, women will apply to a job if they have 100% of the skills on the application, whereas maybe a male would, you know, apply if they only had 50 to 70%. Things like that we want industry to be aware of, that, you know, the females, when they say they can do something, it's not at the same level at the same times. And there should, you know, when we say we want to promote gender equity, that isn't just keeping everybody on an equal playing field. That's giving everybody the individual tools that they need to raise them to the same playing field. So yeah, we may need to be giving women different tools than we give the males because we need them to be playing on the same field. And that's what we try to bring up, is what are some of those things that we need to do. So, you know, we need to have more workshops in school that are directed towards women interviewing skills. Or like when a female student is interviewing with a panel of four male engineers, you know, that of course makes her feel a little bit uncomfortable if she's never done that before. Or for example, one of my experiences, my first co-op job, I was the only female engineer. I was also the youngest because it was my first co-op job in a room of male engineers. So it was difficult to, you know, ask for help or just to know how to reach out. And that's somewhere where the employers come in to teach them how they can reach out in a different way.
I really like your thoughts on the definition of gender equality, because I totally agree with you that it's not keeping. I mean, we can't possibly keep ourselves like on the same level socially. Yes, we should all be respected, but then we're still different, right, gender wise. So I really like that you define it as just individual tools to women and to men, because there are some differences, and so this must be acknowledged. And so you mentioned your co-op experience and that it was challenging. And so how did you overcome those challenges of being a woman in a male field and also the youngest?
Yeah, no, it was challenging for sure, but it was also a great experience at the same time. Everyone I worked with was fortunately extremely supportive and went the extra mile to make me feel welcome within their little community of engineers. But it was, I think, a big thing that I learned from that is, you know, not being shy to ask for help or to kind of push yourself outside of your boundaries. And I think maybe, I know this is something that everyone will say in terms of advice, but I think it's being self-aware. You know, when we say go ask for help, it's not always just about getting up and speaking. It's sometimes about sitting silently and thinking about what you need. So it's more, a lot of these things, when we say we bring up these issues, it's to make people self-aware. It's not to say, hey, let's go out and fix it today. It's about, let's take a minute and realize what's happening, because everyone's different and everyone is going to take this advice a different way. So we need to check in with ourselves to see how we can apply it. So for me, that was about, you know, actually being self-aware of what I needed to talk about with my supervisors, where I needed more help, and being more vocal after I had done that self-check.
Wow. Okay, Manor, thank you so much for the interview. So That was Monrit from Women in Engineering. Thank you so much, Monrit, for coming and giving us this amazing talk. We've, like, both me and Haya learned so much from your speech. And so right now we will play you a few ads, just a few. So please stay tuned, because after the ads, we will have another interesting interview. It will be with Women's Center. I'm so used to Women in Engineering, and I was like, Women in Center. No, it's Women's Center. So stay tuned.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues?
Are you down with decolonization?
Do you have something to say?
Or have a topic to share?
We have just the thing.
Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective.
We're a team of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
I'm Niska from my mother.
From the Tahltan Territory.
I'm a settler from Washington State.
I'm from the Qualicum and Musqueam First Nations.
I am Quichua Indigenous from Saraguro, Ecuador.
We broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land
of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Whatever you want to talk about, we're into it.
Everyone is welcome, no experience necessary.
Unceded Airwaves airs every Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
And we meet every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. to plan our upcoming shows.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Unsealed Airwaves.
We want to hear your story.
At the university. If you're a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a two-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
Basically anybody who wants to
today
volunteer.
I have three members of Women's Center
who,
if you could introduce
yourself.
It's
a very simple process, but
Hi,
they
I'm
put
Nikki.
Their name forward and they want to be a little
and
bit
my
more involved
Gagan.
Than just the collective.
Okay, nice
so
meeting
it's not
you all.
As formal
who was
as
the club created and by
be
whom?
Because we are
since
an open
the beginning
space.
Of time. No,
just
I don't know. We don't actually know who created the club.
For
we
anyone
know
who
our
identifies
current
as a woman,
though.
It doesn't necessarily have
yeah,
to be, you
know,
female. Of course, and there's the general critique of safe spaces that lots of people come up with, but so far I don't think the Women's Center, not in the recent years anyways, has experienced any kind of criticism or complaints or anything like that. Also, just to clarify, we are trans inclusive, mm-hmm. so that's something that's important to note as well.
You are... Today, I have three members of Women's Center. If you could introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Nikki.
I'm Yano.
And my name's Gagan.
Okay, nice meeting you all. When was the club created and by whom?
Since the beginning of time. No, I don't know. We don't actually know who created the club. We know who our current president is, though. Yeah, that's something we don't know.
We can look into that.
And so is who is the current president?
Her name is Blessing Falai. She's in fourth year doing a double major in political science and GRSJ.
And so what is the encompassing mission of Women's Center?
Well, the Women's Center is mainly like a females-only space to provide safety and just reprise on from campus life and all the spaces that can be male-dominated. And it also provides different services, like there's pregnancy tests and tampons and snacks and everything. Just and it's supposed to be mainly a safe space.
Yeah. And so how many, is there a membership in the club or is it just open doors? Like how does it, is it like pop in, pop out or how does it work?
Yeah, so it is open doors. We do have a collective, which is made up of just basically anybody who wants to volunteer or attend events. And then we also have coordinators who, it's a very simple process, but they put their name forward and they want to be a little bit more involved than just the collective. So it's not as formal as other clubs might be because we are an open space. And just to clarify, it is a space for anyone who identifies as a woman. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, female. Of course, there's the general critique of safe spaces that lots of people come up with, but so far I don't think the Women's Center, not in the recent years anyways, has experienced any kind of criticism or complaints or anything like that. Also, just to clarify, we are trans inclusive, mm-hmm. so that's something that's important to note as well.
you are being funded by UBC, the university. And so could you explain like this mechanism, like how is this happening? Like why are you being funded and why is the university interested in your center?
To best of my knowledge, we're funded by the Alma Mater Society on campus. So the AMS gives us funding. I think the AMS gives funding to most clubs anyways, but I think we get a little more because we are part of the resource, like resource group, what are they called? Resource. Yeah.
Resource group, like every...
The resource center.
Yeah, everything center. That's in this space, like in this hallway, gets special funding, I think, because it's the Pride Collective as well and all these other collectives that are like geared towards student aid and social justice in some way. Yes. Yeah.
Logistically speaking, we are a club. So we're recognized as a club, so that's why we get our funding from AMS, but our mandate is a little bit different than, say, like, a chess club or something like that. We're just a, it's a little bit of a different, service.
I think it's because we provide also extra services to all women. It's not necessarily, like, a membership. Like, you pay and you become a thing. We have feminine hygiene products. We have had pregnancy tests. I don't know if we still do. We have female condoms, diva cups, and all sorts of, like, female, like, and those are given to women. So because of that, we get a little bit of extra funding, I think.
And also, I'm actually not aware of how much other clubs get. I don't know if that's a if that's ever been disclosed to the members of this club, but we are also open to people who are not on campus. So if someone, you know, women of anyone like our friends or just women in general are to come into the resource center and they need something, like if they need to purchase a Diva Cup from us, we don't require like a UBC ID or the, you have to be an alumni or anything like that. We are open to the public in some small form.
Okay, and do you, so what other services do you provide? Do you provide any psychological sessions for women or anything else similar to that?
I would say that not exactly, but there is something called consciousness raising that's been going really strongly since last semester. And it's hard to explain if you're not in it because it kind of, it's more than what it sounds like on paper. It's a collective of women that get together in this space and blessing facilitated last year. Kate Webster is facilitating it this semester. And it's just asking a bunch of questions and having everyone comment on it and share experiences about womanhood, about what it means to other people. Just, again, coming back to the message of intersectionality and how we can learn from each other. And I think Blessing said it really well. If every woman's an island, I want us to build bridges. Mm-hmm. That we all, it's very much about interconnecting. And after one semester where we did this bi-weekly, what, every 2 weeks, is that bi-weekly?
It's bi-weekly,
yeah. I think every time we see someone from Consciousness Raising, just immediately, it's just all emotions, hugs and love. Yeah. You're like, how's your mom? You know, we had like, we had questions such as, it turned into some, I wouldn't initially call it anything like psychological or like some kind of aid, but it turned into such like a group therapy where we all got to unload after 2 weeks.
Being a woman can be a very isolating experience, especially if you are further marginalized than just the consciousness raising in itself is a circle, is like a group, it's a collective for women to come and like lead discussions regarding to issues of marginalization, issues of like trauma, ongoing trauma or past trauma that could just be solved or not solved, but like addressed in these, like in this area.
And similarly, most of the executive staff or all the executive staff of the Women's Center have SASC training. And so, and we provide pregnancy tests as well. And so if there's a woman in need that comes in and has a problem and needs to talk to someone, there should be a staff person in here or like just one of us to help out. And I think like with any woman, like most girls, if you go up to them, you're like, I have this problem. I think immediately you're going to receive help. So I think this is just kind of what the space
to
is.
To the best of our ability, obviously.
Absolutely,
to
the best.
Or we guide you to someone that could possibly help you, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
This all sounded so amazing. Like, this is just a great it's club. Good. So, and does Women's Center cooperate closely with any department?
Recently, actually, we're planning an open mic with GRSJ. So with the undergrads, so that'll be fun. We are tied to SASC, so if some we can always, like, go to them and help out with them. I think there's just like, because we're all part of the AMS, I feel like if we ever needed to contact another club, we could easily.
The resource center groups, especially, I think, with the Pride Collective, Color Connected, the talent, we have a few of our members here work for, are kind of like just all across in all the resource groups.
It says on your website that you're open from 6 a.m. until midnight. Is that actually true? Like,
the room is open, the space is open for that time.
There might, obviously at 6 a.m. might not be someone just hanging out all the time, but there usually is people here, we're open as long as the nest. As soon as the nest opens, we're open. As soon as the nest closes, we close. So it's just a space.
Yeah. And so throughout this time period, like, anybody could contact the center and, like, either come here physically or give a phone call, like, if it needs some help or some advice or just...
Yeah, so we're working through some of our logistical things, just what happens with all clubs. Just as students graduate, we get new students, and then just a way to work through with the AMS funding without getting into the logistics of it. There's usually a delay with those kinds of things, and unfortunately, we don't have a phone at the moment. We did in the past, but that's something we're working on getting, and then hoping, you know, someone can man the phone lines or woman the phone lines. but we... At the moment, we don't have a phone, and that's also one of the reasons that there's not someone here with formal office hours, but we do have, the coordinators do keep office hours, but they're just kind of based on our own availability.
And we also have an email that's being checked constantly. That's the best way to contact anyone.
If you want to like collaborate with us, or if you have an issue, you could just, there we have, I think it's ubcwomencenter@gmail.com. Yeah, just email, and there's our coordinators check it. We all check it all at once, like not all at once, but like regularly. Yeah.
What kinds of positive changes or impact has the Women's Center in its history?
There is a group of anti-choice protesters that come every year, I think. They come, I know, the Women's Center holds counter-protests for them every single time they come. We have a whole bunch of posters. They're right underneath there, if you want to see, yeah. Yeah, so we hold the counter-protest for that. We annually go to the Downtown Eastside Women's March that's held for Indigenous women, missing and murdered Indigenous women.
There's political involvement on campus as well. Often there will be a response to some sort of political issue in the past. Yeah. I know there's been banner drops in the past as well.
To sexual assault, yeah. Mm-hmm. To lack of, kind of, UBC's lack of addressing, or just not even addressing, like, doing anything productive for these like awful amounts of sexual assault that have happened on campus. So the Women's Center kind of like rallies for that, and banner drops I know that have happened.
Similarly, I think a lot of the stuff that happens is personal, the impact of the Women's Center. Recently we had a waffle party, for example, that worked out last really week. Well, that was very fun. It was last week, and I think it's just little stuff like that, as well as the big stuff, just, you know, everyday changes as well as big things that we want to impact.
That you've mentioned this topic that I wanted to talk about. Had Women's Center ever been approached by UBC to receive some advice on how it should change its public policy towards sexual assaults? Because I also seen on UBC website, they say that in February they will publish a new mandate, a new public policies towards this issue. And so had you been approached by UBC with advice?
Definitely, that committee has asked for representatives from the Women's Center, and two of our executive staff attend their meetings. So they are involved
with the
and
SAT,
they have
yeah.
been approached. Yeah.
Okay, so you know that they're involved, but I mean, again, the report will be in February, so you don't know.
So really. I don't know how much.
What happens, for example, is like when it was the same committee that, I don't know if anyone on campus has seen those, the consent pieces, the ones that have emojis on them. They're in the bathrooms. Yeah. There's some places on the floors. Yeah. So that was the same committee that had that initiative. And basically what happens is they ask for representatives to go to their meetings and kind of provide like the student experience, not the experience, but the perspective. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the Women's Center. They do reach out across campus to various organizations. I wouldn't necessarily say that we have any sort of direct input on what they do, but we can offer an opinion and kind of represent the student voice.
Is your center building a strong feminist community? If so, how is it achieving its goal?
I think that's a personal question. For me, yes, as a woman of color, and definitely I have found a space in which I can not just hang around feminists, but like feminists of color, people that have gone through similar experiences. I cannot answer that for everybody. Every woman's experience is different. Someone might have come here hoping for a different kind of feminism because there's such a big branch, but we do obviously put an intersectional lens on everything that we do.
So you wouldn't say that the objective of Women's Center is to build a feminist community? That's not really the case.
I think it is, right? I don't know. I think it is to definitely build a feminist community. I don't know if everyone's going to find that. I don't know. Was that a bad answer?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things that the center does. I don't know that it's would be phrased as a feminist community. I think that just naturally develops and is expected to be a part of what the center does. Yeah, and definitely with the strong push for intersectionality, I feel like that's very much the type of feminism.
Yeah,
yeah.
But feminism is both personal and it's political.
I was just gonna say that to come to the Women's Center and participate with us, you don't necessarily need to identify as a feminist. Mm-hmm. So that's not gonna be, you know, some sort of identifier that we're gonna put on everybody. Generally, what happens though is the diversity of women we get here, and they're quite a range of women, from women of color to women who come from different countries, etc. The thing is, a lot of our politics do align, but of course there's room for diversity. We do get people in here who don't agree with our feminist views, but they are still welcome to come and attend our events. It's a safe space for women.
Yeah. Could you mention, like, more specifically, like, what kinds of events and workshops do you organize? Like, you mentioned that you have some, like, you know, some cozy events like eating waffles and stuff like that, but do you have some workshops and something more global and more specific?
We have usually, I think it's once a year, we have self-defense for women that trains women. We have all the equipment in our office to trains women in self-defense. You do not have to necessarily be physically fit. It's for all ability types. It's for all sort of physicality types. If you don't like work out, like, that's okay, you know. It's because I think that's really important too. Yeah, so we definitely do have that once a year. This already passed. We had it in, like, I think October, but yeah, it usually happens every year.
That's amazing. I so did not expect to hear that.
Yeah,
that's such a great idea.
And in the past, we have done it more often. I know sometimes we've done it, you know, each term, and that's definitely one of our most popular events. It's totally free. We tried to put it at a time where most women can attend. And, you know, if we get quite a bit of demand for it, then we'll definitely do another one this term if we can manage to arrange it. But we do bring somebody in who's, you know, has formal training and does that event.
And we have a film screening coming up, actually, called Reflections Unheard, Black Woman at the Civil Rights Movement. I read the title out wrong. Reflections Unheard, Black Woman and Civil Rights. There we go. Yeah, we're doing a screening of that, which I think would be more global and political in that way.
I believe it's the first film of its kind to cast a lens specifically and only on Black women during the Civil Rights era. We have bought the rights to it, and we're hoping to collaborate with Black Lives Matter, if they, the Vancouver branch, if they so graciously have us, into creating like a film, in creating a film screening, and then maybe a panel, Q&A panel with us, yes, and BLM, also maybe the director of the film if they'd like to come, yeah.
Wow, that's so impressive. And right? So when is the screening due?
We don't have a date yet because there's so many parties involved, yeah. But we do have the rights to it, and it is coming up.
Yeah, we're hoping it's sometime this semester, sometime before April. We don't have a date because it's like, yeah, we have to coordinate with BLM, we have to coordinate with the director.
We need a space as well.
We need a space to film it, but when...
You don't know if it's going to be on UBC campus, it might be...
It's probably going to be on... It's going to be... We're hoping it's on the UBC Center, either in the Chan Center. There is Frederick Wood. There's a bunch
or
of...
Or the Egg, even.
There's the Egg, yeah. There's a bunch of theaters that UBC has that we're hoping to show the movie there, depending on what space is open when, kind of scheduling. There's a lot of factors that go into it.
I'm still gonna be keeping my eye on this event. I really want to come now. This is just great. Yeah,
like we said, there's quite a few things that we've mentioned where we don't have dates yet, just because it is a student run group, so there's a lot of planning that needs to happen.
Yeah.
But we do have a Facebook page, UBC Women's Center. Best way to get information is through there.
The Facebook page is also
Facebook page,
always updating.
The other thing you can do, of course, is send us an email.
Yeah.
There's also few women involved in the group who are just always around campus, familiar faces you would probably recognize. And then, of course, you can come to the center, which is located in the Nest. And I know a lot of people don't know where it is, but it's in the second floor, right in the corner.
Right underneath SASC. If you know where the SASC is, on the third floor, we're literally directly underneath on the second floor.
And I would add my explanation to how to find your room.
Yes.
It took me a while to find your room. So the room is 2113, and it is inside this glass hole that says Resource Center. So you need to enter that glass space to find the room. Because
it's wild. It was like 15 minutes.
Yeah, where
is it?
The center, come on.
I have a last question, and then after it, you could let me know if there's anything I hadn't asked, but you would really like to share it with the audience. That please feel free to do so. So I don't know, I can't remember if I actually asked this question already by now, if or not. So officially, like, how many visitors or members do you have in the club? Like, what are the turnouts? Like, how
know, like how popular you are, like what are the turnouts of visitors and membership involvement?
Visitors, there are so many. Recently at our waffle party, it was so packed that like there was hardly any move to any space to move.
And also, if you're becoming a member or a coordinator or a part of the collective of the Women's Center, it's not like you pay a yearly fee or anything like that. Like, I know with some clubs, you have to renew. So a lot of our numbers will reflect people who were involved last year who might not be this year because their course schedule doesn't align with our meetings. We have weekly meetings or things like that. But we do have quite a few active members and coordinators. I would say we have a core group, a fairly small core group of maybe 10 or 15 people who are regulars all the time every week. But it's quite a large collective.
Yeah, collective is somewhere around 40. I just counted.
One by one. And so do you have to pay, like you said, no annual fee?
It's completely free for anybody that wants to join or just come hang out. Completely free. We usually have snacks. The AMS pays for everything. We do, I think, get funded by other women, female women organizations just around campus. I do not know them by heart. Our treasurer knows them. I can maybe email you.
And to mention, we have a feminist library.
Yeah,
actually, we have a feminist library. There's some books in here in the center itself, and there's some in the room right next to the center, which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's a really good resource space, especially if you're writing an essay or something and you can find a lot of sources. I feel like this might be a really good place. Yeah,
totally.
Does this mean like female authors or topics of feminism?
It's topics of feminism. Any woman writer, I don't think they necessarily have to be women. I would prefer for them to be women, but like that doesn't necessarily have to be. There are male feminist authors out there, I'm sure.
A healthy mix.
Yeah, healthy mix. Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about your club?
Okay, so basically how that works is other groups, we do give them honorariums and help fund certain events that we agree with. Groups have reached out to us in regards to funding. Like I know previously there was a march that was going to happen and they asked for our help in organizing and funding it. This particular case, we said no because it just didn't align with our beliefs as a center, as a group. But we do that for sure, provide funding to other things as well.
Totally. We offer services, like we said. We offer all sorts of services, usually feminine needs, from pads, tampons, pregnancy tests, diva cups. Is that it? Books, food, snacks. The real talk. We also have an open mic night coming up, a potential date. This isn't confirmed yet. Is March 2nd. We are hoping to collaborate with the GRSJ department, the undergrad society of the gender, race, sexuality, and social justice kind of department in the Faculty of Arts, to create an open mic night where we can. It's you kind of do whatever you want to do. You can bring a guitar and sing. You can do some stand up comedy. You can tell a story. Whatever you want to do. We're hoping hoping for it to be in the gallery. In the nest or in the hatch in the nest.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Women's Center. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this was our interview with Women's Center. Thank you so much, girls, for being amazing and having us over at your center. For those of you who just switched on Babe Waves, I remind that today we are playing our special production, which is called 24 Hours of Student Power. And now we will play again a few ads. And after the ads, we will play you our last interview, which is with the Women in Science.
Friday, January 27th, Nardwa the Human Serviette is opening up the Video Vault.
Come hang out at CITR to see Nardwa play clips from his interviews and talk about his experience working in radio and getting his start at CITR.
This event is co-presented by CITR, Discorder, and the UBC.
And if you've got a burning question for Canada's favourite interviewer,
this is your chance to ask it.
The Crane Library is looking for students to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a 2-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
again, our dear audience. I hope you haven't missed us too much. So you're listening to Babe Waves. And so right now I am in front of two members from Women in Science. And so Women in Science is a UBC club that was founded to provide support for female undergraduates in scientific fields. And so I would have my interviewees introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Chan Preet. I am the Vice President of Internal Affairs here at UBC Women in Science.
And my name is Valerie, and I am the current President of Women in Science.
Nice meeting you, Chan Preet and Valerie. So could you tell a bit more about your club? Like, why and when did you decide to organize a club, Women in Science?
Yes, so our club was founded 3 years ago, so it's a relatively new club here at UBC, and we focus on three pillars. So our three pillars are mentorship, community building, and connecting people. So one of our biggest events throughout the year is our mentorship program, so that's our first pillar, and so we connect undergraduate females with professionals in the industry. And then for our other two pillars, we host a huge number of other events to help connect and create networks between professionals and undergraduates.
Yes, you've mentioned that you have mentorship, a mentoring program. And so I find this idea of a club providing mentorship to be a really innovative, accommodation to students. So I will explain to my audience what it is. So on their website, by the way, you have to check it out because it is super cool. I got really impressed by their website. So on their website, they say that their mentoring program is when they choose actually real scientific professionals who were graduates from science fields like some long time ago. And so they get in touch with undergraduate female students at UBC, and they guide them and like they advise them, and they actually assist them in building their career in a scientific field. And so how do you find your mentors, and how do you convince them to be part of the club?
Well, we actually have a very structured process. So since all our mentors are usually very busy, they're working adults or they're in professional school, so we start very early. So since the mentorship program's year-round, we start contacting mentors in the summer. And these are usually women that we know personally or professionally. So we've asked, our old professors or our lab coordinators, sometimes even our friends who have gone on to professional schools at UBC or elsewhere. And then that's how we contact them first, since we have already a working relationship with them, and we know them well, and we know that they'd be a good fit for our program. Basically after that, in September or October, we hold our first event of the year, and that's called Meet a Mentor. So that's actually kind of like a rotation style event where every interested student or every interested member of our club gets to meet every mentor in our program, so that they can write down their top three choices for the program, and then we proceed to match them up. So we have, this year we've got 20 mentors, so we had 15 last year, so we've had an increase. And this year, every mentor actually gets paired with two students, so one student per term. Since we had such an interest last year, we decided to make these changes so that we could accommodate more female students for our mentorship program, since it proved to be so popular. And we found that it's been very beneficial for students so far, and that people really enjoy our program. Yeah.
And so you've mentioned that your club is based on three pillars: mentorship, building community, and connecting people. Could you explain a little bit more what do you mean by building community?
Yeah, for sure. So we like to provide kind of a community feeling within UBC, obviously. So what we do is we host a huge number of other events throughout the year aside from our mentorship program. So for example, we had a professional development night in November where we had someone come in and teach people about resume building, networking, interview skills. We also are holding a career panel night next month, and we recently just had a research lab tours which connected undergraduates at UBC with private investigators and also graduate students and undergraduate students. And so they got to kind of network with them, see how they got into their research positions, and also just kind of see what working in a lab here at UBC is really like.
And so what kind of professional development workshops do you provide?
Yeah, so we just had our professional development night. So it was a one-night workshop, but it was composed of a series of different mini workshops, I guess you could say. So it was talking about resume building, interview skills, networking.
And did you have any success stories from all of those events that are happening in your club?
Yeah, so actually recently, as Chanpri just mentioned, we had our first ever research lab tours event. And one of the girls who attended our event visited one of our labs, Dr. Duday's lab, at the UBC hospital. And now she's ended up volunteering at the lab after she visited. So we're really happy to hear that such a successful connection has been made.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's a great news for the club. Are you thinking of taking it to the graduate, or is something special, unique, something like only for undergraduates? How are you thinking about it?
Yeah, well, I don't think we've really ever like considered it per se. I mean, the club is relatively new, so that's a thing for sure. It was only founded 3 years ago for undergraduate students, but I don't think we'd ever be opposed to, you know, letting it grow in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, since everyone on our executive team, including Chan and I, we're still undergraduate students. Like, we're only in third year right now. So we have a very clear, like, we know personally what the undergraduate mind is like since we're there. And we felt like undergraduate students seem to need or would need, yeah, need the most help right now. Because even for us in first year, walking into UBC, we didn't really feel like there was a lot of ways to find out exactly what careers there could be for someone in the science field. I didn't feel like there's any platform specifically that would help us like navigate our degree or like, you know, what careers are out there with like a biology major or a comp sci or chemistry major. So that's a way for our club to really step in and be like, hey, these are some ways you can apply yourself if you want to go into this career, or here's a bunch of mentors who are like in a very diverse range of fields, and like, you know, you can actually be like them too. So right now we feel like, yeah, definitely undergrads, we're trying to fill in that need for the undergrad students. But yeah, maybe in the future we can expand to grad.
Okay, well, good luck to you girls. Thank you so much for the interview, and you, my dear audience, stay tuned for upcoming material on Babe Waves.
So just now you heard our interview with Women in Science, and if Women in Science are listening to us, I'd like to say respect to you girls. Good luck with your studies. You're amazing. And so right now we will play some ads, I believe. And yeah, and that's, I'm actually done for the day.
Thank you so much, Anna, for these talks. They were great, actually, and I learned a lot. So this was part of CITR's annual 24 Hours of Student Power broadcasting event, with student voices taking over the airwaves all day long. We don't have to play any more ads, actually, but we really didn't want to pass on the opportunity to talk about last weekend's Women's March. So now we will play a little piece that Brenna from our collective prepared for today.
My name is Brenna, and you're listening to Babe Waves on CITR 101.9 FM. I went to the Women's March on Saturday without great expectations and was genuinely surprised and delighted at the sheer number of people and dogs that were there. I was impressed by the amount of effort women had put into their signs. They were so clever, biting, and captivating. It did occur to me, however, that the crowd was one giant mirror of myself, an echo chamber of white liberal experience and very little visible diversity. The people that showed up were not your typical politically engaged, social justice motivated, angry feminists. They were the ladies from the middle class and overwhelmingly white. Privilege has a way of padding lived experience, meaning people in locations of social power are unaware and even unempathetic to the systemic discrimination that racialized and classed people face. Framed in the language of equality and rights, the message behind the Women's March is intelligible and digestible to these women and men. It's placed within a framework that they can understand and get behind. It speaks to the narrative of women's progress and advancement, imagining a trajectory that began with the vote and ends with capital E, equality. Now, this business with Trump is imagined as a moment upon this trajectory that can be overcome by appealing to the logic of equality. A backlash against women occurred during the 1980s and, to my knowledge, didn't elicit mass-scale marches by white women, because these are the women that were least affected by the neoliberal shift. This is privilege, the operations of privilege. And for the first time in a long time, white women on a mass scale are realizing that they themselves will be negatively impacted by this new shift in power. Black Lives Matter wants to remind white women that they have been the ones that have always been affected. Their experience in the protest game, and they showed up and have always shown up for white women and are requesting a better integration of causes. The Women's March has been criticized as a simplistic way of thinking about rights that doesn't touch on intersectionality, lived experience, trans women's experience, and racialized experience. It's very much Spice Girls feminism. It's pink and pussies and I am equal to you. It doesn't try to dismantle systemic barriers, nor does it recognize the complexities of the gender system and gender embodiment. If anything, it reaffirms these categories, especially the strict binary between female and male. But at the very least, what the millions of protesters demonstrates is an awareness of the tangible effects of the current backlash and, more importantly, a resistance to it, suggesting a widespread allegiance to and support for feminism, something that wouldn't have happened even 10 years ago. But the energy at the march, it lacked something. It lacked anger. There weren't any chants being led, no pots being banged, there's no noise. It felt like I was going for a nice walk downtown with my friends. The energy was excited and people seemed invigorated by a new political awareness that is absolutely a powerful and productive affect, especially when it energizes a class that holds social power and influence, a class that up until this point appeared relatively protected from the political swings that deeply affect people of color, poor people, disabled people, and trans folks. But before we celebrate this newfound political engagement, I urge us to explore anger. I mean, anger can be a productive emotion and perhaps the uniting force we need at this moment. Feminism is nothing if not iterative. I urge white women to listen to the people who are criticizing the march. I implore you to empathize, not to get defensive. Listen to what these people are saying and validate their feelings. The march may have spoken to you, but listen to why it didn't speak to certain people. White women are not the gatekeepers or rightful owners of feminism or this movement. We are collaborators and accomplices, and it is important to reflect on the principles of allyship and what it means to be intersectional and inclusive. But it's a start. It is something to iterate upon, and it opens up a space for discussions and to make demands. Demand for BLM to have an amplified voice. Demand to hear the voices of Indigenous women. Demand trans visibility. Feminism should not be about reaching equality. It should be a way of thinking critically about the way the world is while simultaneously reimagining the way it could be. In power, in solidarity, this is Brenna, and you're listening to Babe Waves on CITR 101.9. That girl thinks she's a-